Good morning, all, and welcome to the Saturday, February 10th, 2018 meeting of the Washington State Fish and Wildlife Commission. We have a jam-packed morning, so we will get underway with item number 14, which is open public input. We have a half dozen or so folks that wish to come up. I think you all are familiar enough faces here. I don't have to tell you about the beeper. So I'll bring you up two at a time. Don Wallace and Greg King, please. Don, you'll kick us off in the morning.
How many American dippers do you have in your cage?
I'm Donnie Dipper.
We know.
Okay. I'm going to try to make this real quick. First thing, I've been real disappointed in all of you that nobody has come by my Facebook page and made a comment or said hi or liked anything. It's an extremely educational page, and so it's kind of a disappointment. But in that sense, from where I'm going from here with my dealing with banding the dipper, I figure that this is the last meeting I'm going to be able to attend until August, and hopefully by then I'll have a written proposal for you. But at this point, I'm going to start. I haven't started talking about you folks and Fish and Wildlife on my page, and that's what I'm going to start doing now. And getting, if you guys have any emails you want to give me, otherwise I'll just have them send it to the others. I get anywhere from 2,000 to 14,000 views on each of my page or posts, so hopefully you guys will get a lot of emails wanting to protect this bird from our scientists and other people that claim to be scientists. But at any rate, I want to get off that now and get to a month or so ago when the sockeye were running up the Dungeness. I had an amazing, uplifting feeling, and I mean, it was pure epiphany. I mean, it just great. I put on my waders and walked up Canyon Creek because it's been now the second year since you guys put in that fish ladder. And the sockeye run was very strong this year, and I was amazed at the number and the size of the fish that were coming up there. I mean, it was just enlightening. I felt wonderful because what I did was put my waders on and walked up about a quarter mile up the creek. That's about physically all I can do. And I was amazed at there's eagles, there's ravens, there's signs of more coyote activity, but there's never been eagles and ravens coming up that creek because there haven't been salmon or anything running there for over 100 years. And it was amazing because I'd sit there and thought, oh, God, I'm going to be seeing bobcat because I spend every day all day out in that area during breeding season. So I'm going to see all these wild animals and these things. I mean, the eagles were just amazing. I mean, for a quarter mile, there's just bird poop all along the creek, dead bodies of, you know, carcasses of the sockeye. It was just really a really nice feeling. I mean, it really was. So these kind of things will work. It works. It's bringing back predators. I don't think that the nutrients that it leaves, that's going to take 100 years or so to start leaving any nutrients behind. But it is attracting wildlife, and that's a very good thing. But the sad thing was I did remind myself that you guys spent $3 million to put a pile of steel and concrete in the middle of the woods, which it's done a good thing, but a cascade would have been better. So at any rate, Donnie Dipper is going to get more active with you guys. I hope you like the emails that you'll get from that people.
Thank you.
And please visit my Facebook page. Make a comment. You're going to like what you see.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Kurt Kramer and Greg.
Good morning, Commission. I'm going to start out with, I want to thank Tammy Lanniger over there. She's been a great help to me, and kudos, Tammy, for helping me out and guiding me how to interact with this commission. Okay. And Don kind of hit on it a little bit. What I'm going to talk about is nutrient enhancements in our watersheds. And I feel that these are a key essential to our watersheds. We can kick every rock and every log around in the river, but if we don't have nutrient enhancement in our rivers, how are these wild fish, or even hatchery fish, going to recover? You know, Right now, the department is has contract with American Canadian. American Canadian is responsible for distributing these fish to Northwest Harvest. And what I'm hearing out of Northwest Harvest is these fish aren't fit to feed your dog. Okay. So something is going kind of wrong here with the fish distribution. But, you know, and I'm hearing that the department is supposed to have the money to, nutrient enhancement program money as goes to different resources in the fisheries. And I'm just wondering if we shouldn't do some follow the fish things and see. You know, I'm all for the needy getting fish to eat and stuff. Don't get me wrong there. I just think we need to utilize these fish in our watersheds so we can see what happens at least. And it kind of hits on the sturgeon thing we talked about yesterday. Are these sturgeon getting enough food like the callots? Is the callots a nursery, like I talked about? Are these young sturgeon getting the food they need to grow? And maybe they're not, and they're starving to death. I mean, we don't know. But I'd sure like to see some more on that and see where the department can go on that and find out. I know we do very little on the callots with nutrient enhancement. We do some, and then we do the reintroduction up in the upper watershed. But, you know, I think we could do more in some of these rivers and find out what's happening. That might be a little help. So if we kind of look into that, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. And Leanna Parr, please, and Kurt.
Thank you for having me again. I think most of you recall who I am. Thank you, Chairman, Commissioners, Director, and Director, congratulations or condolences on your appointment, whichever is appropriate.
You see the arrows in them already.
Yeah, I'm sure. You will develop more scar tissue. It comes with the job. I'd like to talk a little bit about the North of Falcon process or putting policies. I haven't seen any notification that there was, you know, you accepting comments on the policies, but I believe you need to address at least one issue, and that's in the last 2 years, game fish season decisions have come out of North of Falcon, and I think some policy direction needs to be given in that for your policy. I've provided hard copies of my suggested wording that might be provided, as well as some background information I've developed on potential impacts and reductions of impacts in those freshwater seasons. I believe strongly that if we have to limit the game fish seasons, and a more desirable alternative would be to limit those fisheries with selective gear, my estimates are they would reduce the Chinook or coho impacts by 75%, which would be more than adequate for those fisheries to contribute to the conservations of the resource. The suggested wording I have for the policy is as follows. The various anadromous fresh and marine water game fish seasons in Puget Sound region are of high value that provide unique and high-quality angling opportunities. Those fisheries also provide important diversity in species availability, geographic areas, and user types that are a high management priority for the recreational communities whose management will reflect that priority. I think that provides some needed direction to the agency and highlighting the importance of those unique and very valuable fisheries, at least in my mind. Having addressed that, I think there's also two issues that need to be brought to the table in the North of Falcon discussions looking at long-term management change. And the first of that is a serious discussion about an annual limit on Chinooks in Puget Sound. We have a limited resource and a high pressure yield. You know, typically we have 100,000 to 150,000 angler trips a year trying to catch 25,000 Chinooks. I think a 10 fish a season or a year annual limit in the recreational fishery would spread those fisheries out and provide, the anglers could choose when they use those fish, but I think it's something that needs to be discussed today. And the other aspect, when looking at the Stillaguamish plan and the 10-year plan, it was obvious that the bulk of the impacts on those wild Chinooks, Stillaguamish Chinooks, were occurring in shaker mortalities. I'm guessing about 60-65% of the impacts were occurring as shaker mortality. I think at least in the winter it's time to consider regulations in the recreational fisheries that require the anglers to fish with larger gear. In talking to some of the test fishers and anglers that have fished the bays for years, I'm suggesting that the discussion consider requiring anglers to use gear that has at least a 5-inch profile. I think that'll significantly reduce the numbers of encounters, which directly translates into more man days on the water. And that's what ultimately the recreation is about, is man days on the water. If we can reduce our encounters with the shakers, we will increase man days.
Thanks, Kirk. Commissioner Carpenter's got a question.
I have two questions. The first one is the recommendations that you put forward, I would assume and hope you're going to submit those to Tammy in writing.
Policy ones in writing, as well as the stuff on there. The last two I have in writing. I can certainly provide you an email with those if you like.
I would.
Please.
I know that you're a longtime and very avid game fish fisherman in many of the Puget Sound streams. How many impacts on salmon, as best you can recall, have you had while you're fishing for cuts and dollies, for example?
Using the Skagit, for example, you know, over the last 30 years that I've intentionally fished those things, my encounters with a salmon, a schnook, or a coho during, well, I'm fishing for game fish, is about one fish a season, a fish every 12 to 20 trips. When I'm targeting those fish with the same gear, I average 2 or 3 fish a day. And I often catch as many as, you know, several dozen fish a day while targeting, so that I'm looking at a tenfold reduction in my encounters when targeting game fish rather than salmon.
Joe, I want to make sure that you and Ron are aware that this game fish issue that took place at closure last year north of Falcon was very unnecessary and very burdensome and very expensive, so I'd like to maybe have some dialogue early on about trying to correct that, if we could.
If I may, like on the Still Guamish, the single most robust population in the Still Guamish Basin is the sea run cutthroat population. Right. In fact, it's the only population in the basin that's doing really well. In the case of the Skagit, the two most robust anadromous fish populations are the bull trout and the cutthroat. It seems ludicrous that, you know, we can't find some way to accommodate at least some sort of fishing on those. And you should have several emails with some extensive information on that.
Thanks, Kurt.
Thank
as
you.
Always.
Thanks for coming.
Kevin Turner, please, and Leanna.
Hi, good morning, everybody. I just wanted to say, first off, thank you so much for allowing the wildlife rehabilitators to start working on their own advisory committee. Very important. Very important. Thank you. Thank you so much. With regard to that, I did go ahead and bring forth something I had been working on prior to knowing whether or not that advisory was going to happen or not, and I handed it to Tammy, so she can hand that to you. It's a petition to appeal the current laws as they stand. It's not anything truly official, so, you know, take it, look at it, review it. I'm not, like, going to be upset if that isn't what ends up happening out of all of this, is the changes that I'm suggesting, because I can't speak on the behalf of anyone but myself and the rehab that I represent. So, anyways, that's that. And one other thing, this advisory committee that is being brought together currently, there's a few little issues with some staff at Region 4. Certain rehabbers will not work with staff from Region 4. I'm just going to put that out there so you guys know. There are certain rehabbers who don't want to work with certain people there, and I don't know if you're going to be able to convince them to. So, don't know. Anyways, trying to think if there's anything else other than that. Oh, being made into an enforcement case. So there's a few times where how the current RCWs and laws are worded, that rehabbers have been put in the place of criminal enforcement type cases. I've spoken with enforcement. They really don't want to be responsible for wildlife rehab in the sense that they have been put into that place now. All the people who work as like game wardens or DFW police that I've spoken to, they really think that wildlife rehabilitation should be handled administratively, and that they shouldn't have to go out and police wildlife rehabilitators, per se. That's not what they got into being a DFW police officer for. And I'll just say, first off, like, Sensi over at Ridgefield, Officer Sensi, I think I'm saying his last name right, he was one that mentioned that to me. And I do believe that there's been several others. And if you look into the rehabs that have had issues, they will say the same thing. If they were in charge of having to deal with that particular case, they will tell you they don't want to be dealing with this. They don't want to be dealing with this and killing animals or being part of having to kill animals that are in rehab care. They're in proper professional care. So that's all I'm going to say about that.
Thank you.
Okay.
Marlisa. Kevin.
Thank you for listening to everybody, and we're seems like everyone is talking about improvement of the fisheries in the rivers here. So I'd like to address the commission about a regulation or non-regulation. I'm not sure this is the proper form. If it's not, please tell me. But there's a regulation about the length of leader that you can use in the river. Okay? There is no regulation about the length of leader. So the guys that fish down there call it flossing. There may be some fishermen in this room that are not going to appreciate me bringing this up to you guys. If you don't know what flossing is, I brought my own PowerPoint presentation to show you. Okay?
We love visual aids.
Yeah. Here's your hook. You want to hang on to that one?
Uh-oh.
Okay? And now, here's my weight. That's 12 feet of line. Now, that's about as much as I've seen a person be able to cast their weight out and run down the river. Okay, so what happens? The fish are stacked up in the river. Okay? This fish over here has no intention of biting your bait. That line goes in its mouth and it gets flossed all the way up to the hook. Or it goes over the back and it gets flossed all the way up to the hook. Okay? Now, being a hunter education instructor, I teach ethics. I go down on the river and I see this unethical fishing. I look at the regulation. It's legal. Okay? Because there's no stipulation. Now, Oregon stops you at 6 feet. Right here. Okay? So, with one very easy regulation change, you can minimize the amount of snagging and foul hooking. Yeah. I got you. We're out of here, pal. You can minimize the amount of
fillet and release.
Snagging and foul hooking. You know, just from what I've seen, I go to Gus Backstrom Park on the Tilton River. There's a guy there fishing. He's got a nice fish on. He can't hardly land it. When he gets it up, it's because it's hooked in the back. They brag about flossing. Now, if you want to catch fish, you need to floss. I caught 50 fish last year. And I just give them away and don't put them on my catch record. So very easily, you can limit that leader length and protect a lot of fish that get hooked in the eye and the back and the limb that just gets ripped out. You go down to the river and you watch one of these guys that's doing fishing like this. No one else is catching any fish because the fish aren't biting. They don't want that piece of yarn or that egg or whatever. They're got a fish on and ripping it out constantly because they're snagging fish. So gentlemen snagging, to me it's just snagging. So I would like to know when the appropriate time for the commission to address that rule change is, or if you guys want to take it into consideration.
No, I think you bringing it forward brought it to our attention, so we appreciate that. And thank you for being a hunter education instructor as well. We learn every day. So thank you. Marlisa.
Good morning. I am Marlisa Dugan. I am here to speak later today, and I had so much to say that I thought I might take a few minutes of your time before the panel that I'm speaking on to get some other issues up front. As most of you know, I am a freshwater recreational fishing advocate, and I am speaking on issues that matter to the Willapaw. So it's not on anyone's agenda today, but I'd like to talk about the NEMA fish hatchery and our weir that blew out last year. We have the only weir in the entire system that's fish tight and that has the capacity to do 100% PHAS and PNOS control, and I am very concerned that there hasn't been any money allocated to get this simple weir repaired. And so I'd like to bring that up to address it. It seems like the NEMA hatchery is always the last one to receive funding, and they did a little temporary patch on it last year, which blew out again. So can you please help me out with maybe putting that to the forefront, because it's completely destroyed now. They could have patched it, and they didn't, and wasn't done properly. And please help me with that. So the other thing I'd like to talk about today, because we're going to talk about the Willapaw policy, and I have some grave concerns, and I fear that the department is here today to ask you to turn a blind eye to issues in the policy that matter most: conservation, a rec priority on Chinook, and a payback penalty for over-harvest, in-season management, and early-season dip-ins for commercials. As we move through today and hear testimony from those of us on the panel, from all panels, please do not follow the department down this slippery slope. I was on the ad hoc committee, for those of you commissioners that are new here today, part of an endless hundreds and hundreds of hours that we put together to craft the wording in the policy. Words are important, and they can be interpreted differently for sure. But as I explained to you what the intent of the policy was later in my discussions today, I think it's important that we adhere to what the intent was and that we don't reconstruct what the intent was meant to be, to allow for latitude from the department in managing what truly is a difficult situation. It is a difficult situation down there. The commercials are restricted by impacts on the front end with Chinook, and they're restricted on Chum in other areas. And some of you are very savvy with what happens with fishing, and some of you not. But please listen carefully as presentations are made later today. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Marlisa. Yes, Marlisa, hold on.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You mentioned the payback provision in
yes.
the policy. Where in the policy is that?
I don't have the policy in front of me. It was towards the end of the policy. And Francis?
Item 7.
So some of the items that are in there that were perhaps changed slightly as the policy was actually put into words, but Francis will address that issue when he talks about it later today.
Thank you.
Any other questions that I can address now to take off time later?
Good to see you. Right. And Colleen Mayer, please.
I'm sorry for my late arrival.
That's okay.
GPS decided that I should go to 111 Washington Street in Ellensburg. May I go ahead and get...
We're there in the afternoon. See?
It's just a map.
Just give it to Tammy. And if you haven't done this before, it's 3 minutes. You'll hear a buzzer.
Yeah, I won't be here once, but
okay.
I'm here. My name's Colleen Mayer in Renton. And first of all, thank you for all being here. I'm here to bring up the idea. I know last month we talked about wildlife rehabilitation. And I wanted to make 2 points. The first one has to do with the handout that I gave her. It is a listing. It shows all the rehabilitation centers in Washington State. The ones that are red only do initial care. Then they have to, if it's something that needs further care, switch it to a rehabber. The places that are yellow on it, which is not real distinctive, are places with very limited care. They just will do like one or two types of animals. And the places that have the green are the full care. Puget Sound Wild Care is the second largest in the state, and we're the only one that services King and Pierce County. And now with Soft Place to Land and For Heaven's Sakes out, we're basically one of the only ones. If you look at the map, there's nothing down here. All the rehab places are clustered pretty much up here with a couple over here on the sound. Right now, we are on a very, very restricted permit, and it's politics is all I can say. It hasn't been because of any mistreatment of animals or such. We do about 2,700 animals a year. When I started with us, I came in 13 with an animal. Usually I had to take, if I found or neighbors found an injured animal, it would have to go up to Sarve in Arlington. And I found out that Puget Sound Wild Care had been established in 2010. And I started volunteering with them. And I think when I started, we took in about 1,500 or 1,700 animals. And last year, because of the sanctions with wildlife, fishing wildlife, we did get cut off at the end of the year to bring down permit for very, very, very few animals. So last year we did 2,400, a little bit over than that. The reason we are so big is because of the need. We have people bringing us animals all the time. I'm the volunteer coordinator, a strictly volunteer position. I answer phones during the summer. It's not unusual for us to get 100 calls a day. That doesn't mean 100 animals will come in. A lot of those we can calm people down and get them to leave the wildlife alone. You know, it doesn't need to come in. And for the cases that you don't want to have the wildlife left out, you know, it's a infant or it's injured, we do have them come in. So I would, the one thing that I wanted to mention is this permit thing is lagging, and we have interns that work with us as part of their education during the summer, and they have to know by March 15th if we can actually provide the work. They're ready to buy airplane tickets, and this is not being resolved.
Thank you.
So if there's any way to help.
Thank you for sharing that. Okay, thank you all. Bob, that is a nice beard.